Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Time now for us to welcome in Fox 8's very own John Telich on our Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. JT, a pleasure as always, my friend. How are you this afternoon?
I am doing good, sir, and it's hard to believe that we're looking at, what, week four for high school football and heading into week three of the NFL season. It's already flying by.
It certainly is. It always does this time of the year. And, well, we're talking about a victory this week for the Cleveland Browns. We'll dive into that. And I want to begin with the job done by head coach Freddie Kitchens. You know, I think we always look at the end result week after week, but he had a much more difficult task trying to steer the Browns through what was a pretty difficult week last week.
Yeah, it really was an incredible week when you consider they were just humiliated in their home opener and his first game as the head coach of the Browns. And so certainly not what he wanted on his resume. And he looked to get the team ready for week number two. And then lo and behold, on Tuesday night, heading into Wednesday morning, the horrific news about the death of Chris Smith's girlfriend, that tragic accident on the berm of I-90 West. And she passes away, and so you have a whole locker room that's reeling because Chris is exceptionally popular and loved in the locker room, and he's a good player. He's a role player, but he is a good player on the team. And so he's out of the mix, if you will, initially. Freddie's kind of navigating the emotions of a team through all of that, and they somehow get their way towards Monday night, and Chris on Monday decides, after being with the team and the team lifting up his spirits, that it would be something that he could do to honor her and also honor the little baby that they had together. So it was touching that he, you know, first and foremost decided to play. And then for Freddie to navigate that and then deal with all the national scrutiny from having your team play so poorly, at least the scoreboard certainly showed that in the first game. You know, I thought he did a good job in rebounding and winning by 20 a couple of nights ago.
Yes, indeed. The end result, a 23-3 win for the Cleveland Browns. And Baker Mayfield, I think he certainly is going to be under the microscope for at least a little while here, and at least until he really seems to take off. And, well, you had mentioned to me a little bit earlier, boy, he has taken a lot of pressure early on in the season. How concerning is that?
I think it's something to really take a look at and see. This is kind of a litmus test for how Freddie and the offensive coaches can scheme up things to keep him a little bit more healthy. We know in week one he was sacked 5 times, 3 times the other night. He was hit 11 times. And he's also, it seems like he's still at the point where he's a little bit more indecisive as to where to throw the football. You saw the second half of last season, incredibly precise, incredibly decisive, makes the decision, throws the ball, gets it out there. Not so much happening so far this year, and I know it's an early and a small sample size. So that will be something that Freddie admittedly said in his conference call with reporters yesterday. He's got to do a better job coaching. He said he has to do more things in order to facilitate it for Baker to get that football out of his hands a little bit quicker. Because I think that if you look at the stats around the NFL, you know, he's like averaging about 3 seconds per throw, and that certainly wasn't even close to what he was doing in the back end of last year. It was much quicker than those 3 seconds.
Well, a guy that certainly has been exciting to talk about really since day one when he arrived in Cleveland, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. is one of those guys that is going to be polarizing and maybe to some degree to some fans a little bit frustrating throughout the course of the year. But then again, what he does, what he did on Monday night, going to be very, very easy to begin to overlook some of these things. But 1 week it's a watch, the next week it's a visor. Seems like it's something new each week with OBJ.
You know, Bull, it's never a problem until they say it's a problem. And so had that happened in a decisive moment in the game the other night, all of a sudden they say, there's a problem with your visor, let's get this thing looked at. It was bad enough that they were driving down the field. They were deep in, they were in the red zone. And all of a sudden they're saying there's a problem with your visor and let's get it looked at. It looked like the same kind of a visor that Le'Veon Bell had. But again, it seems like these types of things follow OBJ. And when he says maybe they're picking on me. I'm not necessarily saying he's got a point, because I think he sets up for it to be picked on by, you know, how he carries himself or tries to wear a watch on the field and all those types of things. But the payoff is just incredible. And what he was able to do the other night with 161 yards and receiving 81 on, and he's going 21.7 miles an hour. Are you kidding me? I mean, that guy was flying down that field, and that's impressive. That's what you get with a talent like OBJ. I'm not even bringing up the fact that he caught one ball with that one hand with a guy draped all over him on the sidelines and still got 2 feet in bounds. That was incredible.
Well, we go from one freakish athlete to another and talk about Myles Garrett continuing to rise every single week. You're beginning to see why the Browns made him their first overall pick a couple of years ago. But are these penalties becoming a little bit too much with him?
I think in some ways they are, Bull, because now, you know, the word's out around the league. He's had a couple of roughing the passer penalties. He's certainly on almost every play is so close to being offsides, but I think you take that because he's so lightning quick with his responses to the ball being snapped. I don't know what he can do, though, because it seems like sometimes they're asking him to, you know, be like in the movie The Matrix and just kind of spin in midair and avoid falling on the quarterback. You just got to watch it, and you don't want it to be a point where he's so gun-shy to go after the quarterback that you get the timid version of Myles Garrett. You want the aggressive Myles Garrett that we've seen in the first two games with the five sacks. So it's kind of a fine line, and it's going to be very interesting to see how he is perceived going forward by the people that are officiating these games. The word's out. And so how does he adjust? Will there be a little bit more leniency for him? If he leads with his helmet, as he did on that one hit that took Trevor Siemian out of the game, if he leads that way, you know, he should expect to be called by the league on it, and he was.
Again, we're speaking with Fox 8's very own John Telich on the Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. JT, this has become a pretty hot topic the last couple of days. When you listen to some of the fans around town, you know, you kind of wonder what the expectation might be. Maybe it's a little bit too high, but, boy, there were a lot of fans that were looking for reasons to pick apart a 23-3 victory that was on the road in prime time. Sure, it was against the Jets team that was playing their third-string quarterback, but, geez, oh, man, we are a couple years away from this team not winning any games. Seems like the fan base, on the whole, should be a heck of a lot happier, no?
Well, I think I can understand all these years of frustration of the fans, Bull. I mean, it's been year after year, and you got your hopes up. The fans got their hopes up a year ago and just figured that there would be a leaping off point from the 7-8-1 from a year ago to all of a sudden be an 11 or 12 win team. And, you know, what say you if they finish up the year at 9-7? What if they finish up the year at 10-6 and don't even make the playoff? So there's the expectations that they're a premier upper echelon team, when in reality, I think they would admit it, they haven't earned that. They have not earned that. The fact that they're being thought of before the season began was because of the collection, of talent that Dorsey brought to Cleveland, whether it was OBJ or Olivier Vernon. So, it's cool that they had one of their best performances in terms of winning by 20 points on the road, prime time. I think you go back to 2014 season, they won down in Cincinnati by a 24-3 score. And I can also remember not much happened great after that because they insisted on playing that quarterback by the name. Well, we won't even bring his name up. You know who I'm talking about. but you have a situation here where, folks were nitpicking and they could have played better. I'm not going to, offer any excuses. They definitely could have played better, but the defense was dominant, yes, with a second-string quarterback and then a third-string quarterback. I get that. And the offense had its moments, but by and large, a 20-point win, you should just come off of that saying, all right, did what you had to do, picked up the win, move on, look forward to playing the Los Angeles Rams.
And we're going to come back around to that Rams game here in just a moment, but Let's stick with the offensive side of the ball here for just a moment. I know last week we talked about the Browns trying to do a little bit more to get Nick Chubb more heavily involved. They certainly tried to do that early on in the game. They had some success, and as a result, it seemed like the offensive line performed a little bit better, although there are a myriad of reasons for that. It seemed like they still were able to achieve some degree of balance, but I know that's something you'd like to see a heck of a lot more of.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the stats, you can just look at 35 throws, 18 rushes. That's the look at the run versus pass with the offense. So, yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more balance. And here's the conundrum. They play that 11 personnel quite a bit. And the Rams pretty much live with their 11 personnel. They've got those very good core of three receivers. They got Cooper Kupp back. And so they keep you on your toes. But they can be healthy in terms of how much they use their running game. And I'd like to see it out of that personnel, them run the football just a little bit more, because there's instances where when Chubb is in the game, you think, you know, they're going to be, I'm sure they're going in the direction. When he's in the game, you want the defense to be thinking of run. Well, all right, I think you can still run the football, because with the three wides, you've got less of a amount of personnel in the box, as it were. So I'd just like to see them use that running game a little bit more, work at it a bit, and get to the point where they can control the game a little bit more. But again, kind of nitpicky-ish, because you won by 20 on the road.
Well, they are definitely going to be tested this coming Sunday night. JT, that's going to be an electric atmosphere in downtown Cleveland, because the Indians, of course, are playing at 6:30 at night. And then, of course, yeah, the Browns have their Sunday night game against the Rams. It'll kick off not quite 2 hours later, but that really is going to be a cool spotlight moment in downtown Cleveland. Before we get to the nuts and bolts of the game and, of course, that Rams defense, let's talk about the environment and just how awesome it's going to be downtown on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And I feel bad for the fan. There were many fans that I know of that wanted to do the double dip, and they won't really get a chance to do it as much with the times changed, with they moved the Indians to be on Sunday night baseball, although it's not Sunday night baseball. It's like early evening baseball starting at 6:30. A lot of fans wanted to do the 1 o'clock Indians game and then, of course, go to the Browns at 8:20 at First Energy. So some fans will miss that. It's obviously going to be a logjam in downtown with two games starting almost at, you know, the same time, within an hour and a half of each other. So there will be that situation. The Muni lot should be crazy. I do want to give a quick shout out. I didn't get the gentleman's name, but you may have seen on one of the shows that in a video went around the internet pretty quickly of this gentleman that was shooting some stuff with his phone on top of a truck. Did you hear of this, Bull?
Yes,
and
sure
he,
did.
And he fell off. He fell off the truck. He had some pretty severe injuries, and I know a lot of people were making fun, saying he was, you know, drunk and all, and there wasn't anything close to that. The gentleman actually has an epileptic condition, and he pretty much had, you know, he just had an episode right there on top of that truck. It was incredibly unfortunate, and it was just scary as heck to see this gentleman fall down and really not be able to stop himself. He was in the midst of a seizure, and he had some, you know, broken ribs, and obviously he cracked, fractured his skull. But, you know, I just want to give a shout out to that gentleman and hope and pray for, you know, his well-being in the long term. But that was super scary. The reason I bring it up is that, you know, you're going to have a full day of that down in the Muni lot. And again, I'm not intimating that he was drinking. He was not. It was epileptic in nature. But with people down there all day drinking and then the football game at night, just be safe, everybody. Just be safe. Enjoy the football game. Get there plenty of time, because I know there were still some issues with people and those paperless tickets and all that sort of stuff to get into the stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, having said all that, let's dive into the action on Sunday night. This will be a really difficult test for the Browns. They're taking on a very difficult Rams defense. How does this offense change things up and find a way to conquer that Ram defensive front?
Yeah, what do you say? They say when you've got a great talent, you run right at them. I don't know about that. It seems like Aaron Donald can do everything on a football field. The onus is obviously going to be on that offensive line, and some of them did great out pretty well the other evening. They all have to play in great synchronization. So the onus is on them to be sharp as can be, as they're on that football field right now in Berea, you know, have to be on their toes working on every possible thing that could come up against the defense, like the Los Angeles Rams. They're just a real good team, and they're not facing a third-string quarterback. They're facing one of the better QBs in Goff. They're facing a good running back. All of those things that the Browns defense is going to have to deal with. Same thing for the Browns going against Clay Matthews and Aaron Donald and the rest of the people on the defensive side of the football. It's going to be a great atmosphere, and we'll get a good idea of the growth of this team and see if they can make a great leap forward in their development and be the type of team that the Rams were after they had some baby steps 1 year and then really, you know, they threw away the chains, and they really play great football, like only second or third year of their involvement in getting to be a better football team.
Certainly looking forward to Sunday night. That'll be a measuring stick game for this Browns team, no question about that. JT, before we let you go, my friend, got to talk a little high school football action. You had the chance to make the rounds last Friday, and boy, oh boy, was Friday an interesting night with all the nasty weather we had in the area. Hopefully Mother Nature cooperates a heck of a lot more this coming Friday, but your thoughts on what you saw last Friday, and where will you be this coming Friday?
Well, this week it's going to be good. I think what we have weather-wise today is going to be kind of like what we're going to have on Friday, so I think we, you know, dodged a bullet in that respect, and so that's an exciting situation. I'm going to go from the little to the little bit bigger schools on my two games that I go to. Each of us go to a couple of games and to be able to get to 18 to 20 games per Friday. And I'm starting with the little war between the smaller schools but powerful schools in Cuyahoga Heights visiting the defending state champions, Kirtland Hornets. So that's the first game. Then the second one, Lake Catholic will be at the JTO, the Osborne Stadium in Mentor, hosting Cleveland Heights. So I'll have that game. Interested to see this week on, you know, how a team like Hoban bounces back after St. Ignatius roared back, being down by a big deficit, down by three scores there, and they came back and beat them and ended their 31-game winning streak. Interested to see how Avon plays this week, how Avon Lake plays. You've got a good game, I think, in Euclid, Medina. You know, so there's some good matchups that we'll be keeping our eyes on. And I'm curious to see, you know, if Hoban just kind of picks up the pieces and moves on from the stunner that the Ignatius Wildcats put on him in the second half last week.
Funny you mentioned that Kirtland-Cuyahoga Heights matchup. I am calling a game on Friday night between Columbia and Firelands, and Coach Tom Evans, who is, of course, the superintendent at Cuyahoga Heights, he's providing the colorful analysis with me on the broadcast, so I'm sure Coach is going to be checking his phone on occasion to see what's happening between Cuyahoga Heights and Kirtland, so that'll be a very interesting one to follow, no question about it.
And I could also drop in one of my games that I got to last week before the weather really got to us was that Mayfield game with Nordonia, and that young fellow with the number 55 can play some pretty good football, that young Mr. Barch. So kudos there.
Oh, much appreciated. My nephew will be happy to find out that he made his way onto the show. So I told him you were going to be there. I told him you'd be looking out for that. And I know that was a game that they were very excited to play, came out on top against Nordonia, and now those Mayfield Wildcats are 3-0. So it should be a lot of fun to follow. JT.
Yeah, Coach Ross has got a good thing going there. Bandera is doing a nice job.
Yeah, no question. No question. JT, as always, my friend, we appreciate the time, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
You got it, Bull. Talk to you then.
Thank you very much. Again, that's Fox 8's very own John Tellich joining us here on the Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. We need to get to a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I will return with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and on the new 100.3 FM.